Investigating truth in a world of lies. You are listening to the John Age Project.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
Hello and welcome to the Anomic Age. I am indeed your humble host, Mr. John Age. We have an excellent program for you today. We're going to be welcoming onto the program for the very first time, Mr. Robert Scott Bell. We'll be discussing all things wellness, health, so forth and so on. We'll get into vaccines. We'll get into naturopathic, homeopathic, all things in between as it pertains to health and wellness and your well-being overall. But before we get into that, we got a little news segment to get into. A little housekeeping. We got a little more housekeeping than we had last week. And just all things in between. If you haven't already done so, make sure and check out anomicage.com. That's where you can find all things Anomic Age, all things me, all things our guest, present, past, all things in between. You can contact me. You can sign up for the newsletter. You can absolutely donate to the program right there at the bottom right of your screen via PayPal. So most definitely do that. That's very important. If you haven't already done so, please like all the links. Please share all the links with your friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. What else can you do? You can subscribe to the various platforms, YouTube and Brighttown. You can subscribe to those channels as well. If you go on the homepage of AnomicAge.com, you can find all ways to support the broadcast. If you just want to go to PayPal directly, you can go to paypal.me/AnomicAge, and you can donate directly there as well. So, please do all that. Do something. I always close the show with that, but I'm going to begin the show with that as well. You can't do everything, but you can do something. You can share the links. You can subscribe to the broadcast. You can download the iPhone, the Android app. You can check us out on iTunes. You can just go to anomicage.com and jot that little URL down and put stickers on your car or on legal and lawful areas throughout your town, city, so forth. All that you can do to make a difference. If you're not doing anything else, please just share the information. That's the biggest thing. I always say, without you, the audience, I'm just a guy talking into a microphone or the camera in front of his face. So you are key, the cornerstone to this whole apparatus. What else can we talk about today? We got housekeeping. I hate to just keep belaboring this point, but it just keeps coming up again and again and again. This whole shadow banning, censorship thing of online media. And make no mistake about it, I consider myself a very small fish in this very big pond. Okay? I know my place, and it one day will be greater. But right now, I'm no Alex Jones. I'm no Tucker Carlson. I'm no Sean Hannity. No Rush Limbaugh. Not even close. So I guess I find it kind of odd that I'm getting any flack in all those social media sites, but it's definitely happening. It's bizarre. If you look at my YouTube channel right now, my numbers are quite off. If you look at the actual last video, it says I have this many. And if you look at my homepage on YouTube, it says I have about 10 less than I actually have, according to the numbers. But that's just a whole side note. The real hilarity that I picked up on, and I picked up on this last week and a little bit the week before. I just didn't address it because I was thinking to myself, maybe I'm just exaggerating. Maybe there's some glitch in the proverbial matrix, as it were. After more than 3 weeks of this, I'm thinking, they're legitimately shadow banning my stuff. So I checked out the usual websites and apps where you can check your shadow ban status. And yeah, Anomic Age on Twitter is absolutely shadow banned. And it's making sense to me now because their algorithms can't quite perfect, at least, shadow banning and censoring your images. So if you check out my Twitter, my memes are doing great. I mean, they're getting all kinds of retweets and likes and love and everything else and comments and so forth and so on. But those are just images. So I don't add anything to those comments and posts when I tweet those to people. They're just the image. So those are getting all kinds of good positive press and everyone's seeing it. If you contrast that to the last 3 weeks where I've posted information about the guest. So, for example, last week I had the guest on last week, Mr. Hugo Fugan, and the information he was covering and the links and so forth. And I put that as my primary link, and then I sent that out to a lot of people that had much larger, you know, the 200K and million level accounts of whom follow me. I say, hey, check this out. You know, if you could just pass this along, so forth. So the last few weeks, I've probably sent easily 20 plus of those tweets to people. And in return, I probably got about grand total, let's be really exaggerated, I probably got 5 retweets and likes from those. And I know some of you thinking, well, maybe they just didn't like your material. And then, yeah, I ain't buying that for a moment. Even if you hate the material, most of these people, especially the 200K and the million level people, are just going to like and love a lot of the stuff, if it's of the vein that they're interested in and following, of which my last guest absolutely was, and the previous, and every guest we've had on this program. So even if you hate what I just sent you, out of those 20 to 40 people that receive that, there's at least going to be 10 that like it. They're going to put the little heart and say, okay, we like that. And you're probably going to get at least about the same retweeting that. I've gotten 0. I've got an absolute flat line, patient, dead on the table, cold as a block in the morgue on the information that I've sent on the past guest and the previous guest as well. So to me, it seems very obvious that Twitter is just flatlining my patient. As long as I post cute little pictures that everybody can just laugh at and like and retweet, that's beautiful. But if I start to get into the realm of information, if I start to get anything out there that says AnomicAge.com on it and URL links to the guests, just flatlined, completely gone, not even there. And it's super bizarre. Well, I mean, it's not bizarre. I'm just saying that as a bit of hyperbole. I think it's another coping mechanism where I'm saying, hey, this is crazy. I can't believe it. I can. I totally get it. I understand it. And for me, it was just something that, like many of you, I believe, once you're in the arena, so to speak, you sort of have a whole new perspective because you start to see things occurring to you on a very small scale. Make no mistake about it. Compared to a lot of the folks that have been killed or been death threatened or families and so forth, and like Tucker Carlson, which we'll get into in a bit. Not that, but I mean, even these small little ripples in my own little tiny pond don't cause a chilling effect with me, but it definitely sort of resonates in my brain where I'm like, wow, this is kind of crazy. People are censoring my Hugo Fugan interview. Why? Fugan's a very smart man. He brought a wealth of documentation and evidence and just all types of data to the table. We didn't have any four-letter words. You know, we didn't have anything even remotely scandalous, all right, but it wasn't profane, you know, in the ilk that you might expect from some of the big-name shows out there that throw all kinds of obscenities in and talk about weed and booze and sex and all that illicit mess. Nah, we're just talking about the hoax, the funny hoax. But that was too much, I guess, because it's got a flat line on the table all across Twitter. So if you're listening to this and you're picking up on that, please feel free to retweet, like, and post all kinds of stuff, AnomicAge.com, all over your platform, please. I mean, I said this before, way back with our interview with Rat Skates, and I touched on it even before that. It's up to us. It is the individual. Stop looking to your right and left and over your shoulder. Look in the mirror. If you want to see how we're going to solve this problem, it's that person that you're seeing every morning when you're brushing your teeth in the mirror. Okay? Stop thinking that it's going to be some some alphabet agency that's secret that nobody knows about who's in it, and you can look at the codes and keys and figure out who it is and figure out what's going on. Stop it. Stop. Stop expecting the president to save you. Stop expecting the secret decoder ring society that's going to give you little breadcrumbs to save you. Stop it. Look in the mirror. Cut off the stuff. Sit in silence and look in the mirror. It's going to be you. Okay? Stop expecting the cavalry to be coming over the hill. It's going to be you. It's going to be us collectively, not the socialists collectively, not even linking up collectively, but it's going to take all of us doing our own individual thing to make this happen. Because if you start linking up collectively and you form your own little group, and we're this group and that group, yeah, you're easily to target. Check out Art of War. It's all in there. Okay? If you want to make yourself a harder target, you have an individual group. You have a small battalion of one or two. Okay? Look at the work that George Washington was doing. I say work. Look at the battles he was doing in the Revolutionary War. He was fighting. He was retreating. He was fighting. He was retreating. He kept moving around and coming back and moving around and coming back. He wasn't sitting there like the British in a line, just marching through the woods. Here we come. We're coming to save the day. Yeah. Stop that. That's not going to get it done. Okay? Not going to happen. So look in the mirror. Look at your own little collective. Start saving yourself, your family, your loved ones, and then work it out from there. Stop expecting the mystical group to save you. Stop expecting President Trump to save you. Stop it. That's stupid. All right, enough of that. Let's get into some news, shall we? There's a lot of news to get into, as always. And as always, I've given you just a little smattering of the news, considering I'm only a weekly program. Good grief. I want to do this every day because there's so much news to get to every single day. It is insane. This one is coming from the Colorado Independent. And this is coming from Alex Bernis. The people are calling Candy Seribaca a communist. She'd rather be called an anarchist. Oh. To which I would add, just try to clean it up, John. A turd by inner the name is still a turd. An in-depth Q&A with the self-described radical leftist just elected to Denver's city council. This is coming from June 21st, 2019. There's a lot here, so I'm going to try to sort of skip around until we get to the better stuff. The context at a candidate forum on April 7th, Seribaca offered some remarks that to many sounded like she was advocating a communist form of government. Again, I've said this before, I'll keep on ringing that bell. These communists are uncloaking. They're coming to the end of the rainbow here, and they see the writing on the wall. They see what's coming. They see that the people are beginning to wake up slowly but surely. And what they're going is, oh, wow, the people are waking up. The sleeping giant is getting off the couch and putting down the beer and the weed, everything else. And they're going, wow, we better go for broke. Let's throw all of our stuff on the table. And that's what they're doing. Here's the quote here. I don't believe that our current economic system actually works. Capitalism, by design, is extricative. And in order to generate profit in a capitalist system, something has to be exploited, she said. I believe in a community ownership of land, labor, resources, and Barack Obama's distribution of those resources. Oh boy. And so whatever that morphs into, I think is what will serve community the best. And I'm excited to usher it in, underscore this people's, by any means necessary. I didn't stutter. That was a direct quote. This is all in quotations from the article. And by any means necessary. And I'll skip down because here's the fun. This is where she really starts to throw in the usual suspect communist parlance here. Well, where are we at? Here we go. Anything you want to add? Here we go. This is it. This is the playing the victim card as usual. I don't want to say that people painting the by any means necessary line as dangerous, that's rooted in racism. Okay. I believe in community ownership. Yeah, this is the quote that I just read. So I don't want to say that people painting by any means necessary line as dangerous. That's rooted in racism. So here we go again. The usual tactic of the communist trash. When they receive any sort of blowback for their comments, they always resort to the same old tactics. They start crying racism, sexism, homophobia, transspeciesophobia, fill in your favorite blank of bull. So that's what she's doing. It's the classic tactic by the communist trash. They pull it every single time. And every single time, the conservatives in the MSM capitulate to their garbage because they don't want to be name called. Oh, no, don't call me racist. Oh, no, don't call me sexist. Please don't call me trans-species phobic. So every single time, the communist trash use the same monikers, and the, I wouldn't even call them conservatives, the other wing of the same bird pull the same mess, and they say, oh, Massa, please don't call me that. So, again, for my money here, the communists are just, they're just uncloaking. It's like the Starship Enterprise. They're going along, let's cloak for a while. You know, since LBJ, let's cloak. And then 2019, they're beginning to uncloak a little bit. They were doing it gradually here and there, but now it's just full-blown uncloak. Yeah, we want to kill babies after they're born. Yeah, we want to take all the guns. Of course we want all people coming from all countries. No borders, no walls, no USA at all. It's all coming. And the best part is the people aren't doing anything about it. Here we go from the gatewaypundit.com. Google dash YouTube deletes Project Veritas video exposing Google interfering with elections against conservatives. Hey, this can't be real. This is coming from Jim Hoft, June 24th, 2019. This is coming from our old friend James O'Keefe from Project Veritas, in case you're not up to speed on that. Project Veritas released alarming new undercover video, leaked documentaries, and testimonies from a Google insider revealing that the tech giant's plans to meddle in U.S. politics and prevent a Trump situation in 2020. Well, what do you think they were doing in 2019? They were doing the same thing in 2019 that they're going to do in 2020. The same thing they were doing in 2016. What they're really doing is just incrementally ratcheting things up. So, of course, the things you see now are going to be exponentially greater in 2020. And the same exact things that you saw in 2016, you know, are exponentially worse now than they were then. It's just a continual ratcheting up. That's how this system works and promulgates along. I mean, that's what's happening, folks. Please wake up. So this Google person, you know, there's all kinds of quotes here. I could just keep on reading those. I'll give you the broad strokes. To this Google insider, and again, I want to emphasize this. This isn't just a person that makes copies. This isn't the janitor at Google. I'm trying to find her exact title, and I'm failing to do so here. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Oh, here we go, here we go. Footage of longtime Google employee and head of responsible, huh, that's cute, Google, innovation, Gene Janai, saying Google has been working diligently to prevent the results of the 2016 election from repeating in 2020. Of course they are. And they're doing it by the same means that I just touched on at the beginning of the broadcast. They're censoring, they're shadow banning, they're manipulating results, they're manipulating algorithms. They're doing all that and then some, so that when the average boob looks at their Facebook, their Google, their Twitter, their YouTube, anything, the average boob's just going to look at it and go, wow, I guess there's, you know, there's nothing going on. There's no algorithmic changes with Google. There's no censorship, no shadow banning, no nothing. It's all okay. It's that Russian collusion, I tell you. That's what's really going on. Because, I mean, it doesn't take a brain surgeon or some sort of high-tech physicist to figure this stuff out. Search for yourself. Look for yourself. Get into the arena and see how your comments and otherwise are going to be changed on these platforms. I encourage you, everyone, to do it. Everyone's got to do it. Do your own thing. Here we go. Another one from MAGA Media. MAGAMedia.org. Is that right? Yep. MAGA Media. Wake up to the truth is their tagline. I like it, MAGA Media. Very well done. This is coming from June 24th, 2019. San Francisco mayor tweets out warning to illegals. Promises to protect them from federal officers upholding federal laws. Oh, this gets so more nauseating all the time. I'm trying to scroll down. They've got his actual tweets in here. Good grief. So he's got the tweets in Espanol y también en inglés. Aquí. Oh, Dios mío. So the bottom line here is, okay, this is his tweet here. So the mayor here is tweeting out warnings to illegal immigrant criminals and gang members in languages that aren't English, promising to protect them. Oh, I guess this is a response to his tweet, I see. In several different languages, she warns illegals of pending ICE raids and promises to protect them from federal agents upholding our laws. San Francisco mayor, that says, at London Breed, LONDONBREED, that's at London Breed on Twitter. I guess that's her handle, this lovely mayor from where else? San Francisco, of course, just a hive of fun. Yeah, it just goes on. It shows you all the tweets, and it shows you the different languages and everything involved here. Bottom line, I'm not even going to belabor this anymore. The big thing here is, why are these cities, states, officials, and otherwise still getting any federal funding? I mean, people like to point the finger here, there, and everywhere, but I mean, this is something the president can very easily grab hold of, I believe, and send a very clear message to these folks and say, hey, you either follow our laws or you get no funding. Happy trails. You know, I mean, that would be pretty succinctly put, I believe. It begoggles the mind at some points. And I realize it's not everyone in these states, so it's hard to say that, because there's a lot of good people in California and New York and Washington State and Oregon and all these other communist-run scum holes that we typically think of. I mean, there's a lot of good people in those areas that aren't communist trash, that are just wanting to live their life and be left alone by the government. And you got these pockets of... almost went crazy and spoke bad, very bad there. You've got these pockets of stuff, like New York City, San Francisco, and so forth, where these bottom feeders dwell. And they make these brash accusations, and they make these asinine tweets saying, ICE is coming, ICE is coming, just run in this other way. We wouldn't want you to get caught up in violating federal laws. No. But at some point, the people in these states have to really take the reins, I think, the conservatives, the patriots, the people with any sort of gray matter in that big hollowed out pumpkin on their skull, they got to take the reins and do something here. Something, you ask, what is that, John? I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, but you got to do something. You can't keep being led around by the nose by the communist filth in the major cities, because Lord knows if our king and supreme dictator of America thinks would be quite bleak. So it's good that I'm not. It's way, way better that President Trump is the leader than me, because that would be bad, bad for everyone. This one's something I wanted to read you and just go over from one of our very early guests on the program, Tanner's dad, Tim Welsh. Tanner's dad, at Tanner's dad on Twitter. And he put this tweet out a few days ago, and I always wanted to get into it. It was a YouTube link, and it was really just chronicling this hashtag bullying backfire. And the whole piece is quite disturbing. So I won't get into showing you the actual video or even playing any of the audio, because there's a lot of profanity in there. It's not from Tanner's dad, don't get me wrong. The hashtag on this video is "We Did It." And the whole thing is chronicling all these different late night hosts, all these different quote unquote celebrities, all these various elites and scumbags that quote unquote hashtag "We Did It," meaning we vaccinated. So the whole piece is kind of the dichotomy between, it looks like on the left of each page, screen rather, it's a video, on the left of each screen, or sometimes in the center, it's a person going hashtag "We Did It," meaning we vaccinated our child. And then on the right side of the screen, it shows a vaccine damaged child from various forms, from folks with all kinds of electrodes on their heads to all kinds of high fevers and skin issues, brain damage, and then it goes all the way up to showing graves and coffins and so forth. So it shows this dichotomy. But what really struck me while I was watching this was the supreme arrogance of these, oh, it's hard to clean this up, these scumbags. The arrogance of these people on the screen, they're on the center and on the left saying, "We did it." And they keep really calling out with such great vitriol to anyone that doesn't vaccinate. That's why I said the profanity-laced tirades here. This is nothing put out by Tanner's dad with any profanity in it. The profanity is coming from the communist scum in the cult of the medical mafia that are name-calling and cursing at people who don't vaccinate. They're, you know, going, "You expletive, expletive. How could you not vaccinate your child?" And so forth. And there's just a litany of this. I was watching the whole thing, and when I began it in the beginning of this this short video, I was thinking, all right, well, maybe it's just a couple of people cursing and showing themselves. No, no, the whole video is just laden with the same sort of profanity, and it's all directed towards anyone who's actually not vaccinated. So I'll get to this topic quite a bit with our guest, Robert Scott Bell, but I mean, just to address it here, it's the extension of high school all over again. It's every sort of silly after school special anti-drug campaign that you ever saw as a kid. It's, "You got to do this. I can't believe you're not doing this," and cursing at you, "Not doing this. You got to do this." I mean, that's sort of the mentality of these buffoons. And the sad thing is, this sort of groupthink works for most people. Most people are not awake, or I don't think even want to be awake to this sort of stuff. They're just going, "Oh, please don't name call." You know, like the dichotomy we discussed a moment ago between the communists and the so-called conservatives. "Just don't call me racist. Please, master, don't call me racist." And then in this case, it's, "Oh, please don't call me an anti-vaxxer. No, never call me anti-vaxxer. Please, master, don't say anti-vaxxer." And that's what we got going on here. These folks are kowtowing down to the communists on every level, on the medical mafia level, on the immigration level, on the sex versus gender level, on any sort of level you want to put it at. It's the same old groupthink of, "Please just don't call me a special name. gosh, no, not the name again. Let's move on. This is coming from CBS Sports. Adam Silver on NBA using the term governor in place of owner title. We moved away from that term years ago. Silver said he is sensitive, oh, thank you, Adam Silver, to owner, and that the league is continuing to move away from that term. As NBA teams make some major moves over the offseason, a potentially less notable change is already occurring throughout the league. Hallelujah. According to Commissioner Adam Silver, the NBA is continuing to move away, far away from the term owner to describe those controlling interests of teams in favor of the term governor of the team. And alternate governor. What the heck? Alternate governor? What the heck does that mean? It's just more the same. It's the more continued adulteration of the language. And as I read this the first time, and I'm reading it again now, I just keep coming back to the same thing. The language is continuing to be adulterated, changed to fit the Orwellian doublespeak of the communists, global communists, whatever you want to call them, the loving Easter bunnies, whatever, that are trying to control and manipulate the populace. And that's all this is. It's in much the same vein as we got the term migrants or undocumented workers, when 20 years ago it was, no, you're an illegal alien. You're not an undocumented worker or a bleeping migrant. You're an illegal alien. You came here illegally. You need to be moved on out quickly. That's how it works. You're not an undocumented anything. And when I first heard this term, what was it, almost a decade or so ago now? I always do this. I think, okay, how could this work if we flip this or if we added this sort of brain dead mentality to other things? You know, this sort of mental illness of communism to other things. Well, what if a person is raped? Well, are we now going to call that rapist an undocumented sex partner or an unrequited lover? Is that how far we're going to kick the can down the road here? Oh, no, no. So-and-so wasn't raped. It was an undocumented sexual encounter with an unrequited lover. That's what it was. It wasn't a rape. Yeah, yeah, that's it. Makes perfect sense, communists. Perfect sense. Here we go again. Gateway Pundit from Jim Hoft again. Lock them up, colon. South Dakota parade float with crooked Hillary and Obama behind bars gets Democrats hot and bothered. No, not that, Democrats. Not hot and bothered. Highmore, South Dakota 50th Annual Settlers Day was a huge success this year. I wish I could see the picture of this. This is great. It's got a woman and a man, one wearing the Hillary and the other the Obama mask, like a Halloween mask, and they're in a cage of sorts, a large cage of sorts, being pulled down the street on a float. It's just a wonderful time to get together and come back home, said Vicky Day, the mayor of Highmore. But one parade float did get people talking. Here we go with the quotes. I had to think about it with the mask of Obama coming out as racist, said Jeff Damir, the creator of the controversial float. The float portrays former President Barack Obama in a cage with Hillary Clinton, while the current president, Donald Trump, stands on the outside. I just wanted to put it out there. It was just my view that I feel that they should be charged, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, said Damir. Damir's float has stirred up a lot of talk on social media. Highmore Mayor Vicky Day says city officials have received a lot of messages from people who think they shouldn't have allowed the float. No, not the float, please. If only it was naked gay men gyrating around on children, that would be acceptable. But a float with the caricatures of Barack Hussein Obama and Hillary Clinton on it, oh, that's just not going to be allowed here in Land of the Sheep, Home of the Slave. My stance, and the city's stance, is that every person has a right to the First Amendment. Whoa, Vicky Day is a racist. That's it. That's it, Vicky. You can't talk about the First Amendment. And any sort of talk of free speech is just hate speech. I can't believe this. I'm going to stop right now. To express his or her own speech and the expression of it, we do not regulate that, says Day. Okay, we can't read any more of this hate speech or everything I have might be pulled offline. Whoa, that's just too much to bear. Let's move on to another article. This is coming from Forbes.com. Chase Peterson. Beer drinkers are boycotting Yuengling after its billionaire owner endorses... Oh, say it ain't so. Say it ain't so, Yuengling. Trump! Oh, God. Trump. Whew, so sad. One of America's wealthiest beer makers is in hot water after voicing support for none other than Donald J. Trump. Dick Yuengling, the fifth-generation owner of the America's oldest brewery, gave Eric Trump a personal tour of his historic Pottsville Penn plant on Monday, and according to local reports, told the young Trump, "Our guys are behind you and your father. We need him in there." Good grief. I mean, this guy may as well just got a Nazi tattoo on his head and started burning crosses all over the lawn. This is just hate speech. Everybody just run from Yuengling. Run, run, run now. Wow, this is scary stuff, I tell you. Scary. I don't drink. I don't do any drugs. I don't support any of that. Quite honestly, I think it's idiotic and stupid. But bravo to Dick Yuengling for actually having the cojones to speak his truth. Thanks, Dick Yuengling. Good job. All right. Well, we've covered a whole lot of news. We still have a whole lot more news to go, but let's pump the brakes on that a little bit, and we will gillette over into our guest today, Mr. Robert Scott Bell. If you are unfamiliar with his work, you can find his work on robertscottbell.com. He's got a daily radio show that you can tune into. He's got a book, which we'll talk about, and all kinds of more information worth getting into. Very excited to have this guest on the program. So, stick around for a few moments. We will introduce our guest and get into him in a mere matter of seconds. Thanks for joining us. Stick around. It is my distinct pleasure to welcome Mr. Robert Scott Bell to the program today. 6 days a week, Mr. Bell empowers his listeners with healing principles that can aid in physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, economic, and yes, even political healing. Robert hosts the fastest 2 hours of healing information on radio, dealing with everyday health issues from the perspective of alternative holistic healthcare. Robert Scott Bell tackles the tough issues and shows no fear when confronting government and corporate bullies who would stand in the way of health freedom. Robert has personally overcame numerous chronic diseases using natural healing principles and has dedicated his life to revealing the healing power within all of us. And as a well-known and respected member of the health community, has access to fantastic guests from every specialty and practice to better equip his listeners to heal themselves from the inside out. Thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you, John. Nice to be with you today, and happy to connect to a whole new group of folks that are probably seeking answers to questions that are maybe impolite to ask, certainly within mainstream media circles. A lot of the stuff that I talk about, I'm sure that you talk about as well, is not something you'll see in a mainstream media report, or if it is, it's usually denigrated and castigated or made to be ridiculous. And of course, having what we call media 2.0 or new media, the opportunity to communicate these things that a lot of people are hungry for is a great thing. So I appreciate what you're doing as well.
Thank you so much for what you're doing out there. I always say, or I want to say no patronage, but I keep resisting the urge to put Dr. Robert Scott Bell on the front of this whole thing, because you bring so much to the conversation. I've been following your work for quite some time, and I really love how you're exposing and, like you said, sort of tackling these tough issues that, for the most part, the mainstream media especially isn't going to touch with a 10-foot pole. A lot of people, I think, go to Fox News as their default. And I always say, well, they're really not touching the vaccine issue. They're the ones with five or six, you know, medical mafia commercials in between the guests. And yeah, it's a lot to tackle out there.
Well, and they corrupt the language. You know, you mentioned the word doctor. If you look to the origination of the word, doctor is a teacher. If you want to use the concept of a healer, fine. But what they've done by co-opting doctor to be meaning only, for instance, medical degrees, I kind of utilize the word against them. You know, they've become basically glorified drug pushers since 1910. The Flexner Report that happened was a preordained commission report that the Rockefeller Carnegie Foundations hired out, basically the Flexner brothers. They had more impact on the 20th century than any other pair of brothers, including the Wright brothers. And they basically altered medical curricula to be teaching the physicians, what we call medical doctors of the day and even to today, to be basically focused only on pathology and disease primarily. And the solutions for it were now to be considered petrochemical patent medicines that were approved by the FDA, which I call the Fear and Death Administration. So it wasn't about nutrition, diet, detoxification, all the basic concepts, even acknowledging energy as a source of, our very existence, our very life, being more along the lines of, if you call it eclectic medicine, but certainly not just specifically or only molecular reductionism, right? There was a vitalistic view of the body prior to Flexner, the Flexner Report of 1910. And I wrote about that with Ty Bollinger and I in Unlock the Power to Heal, to give people a basic history lesson, very, very brief, but to help people understand how we got here, how we got this disaster of a healthcare system, which has little health and no care, and all about managing diseases or, in fact, creating them. So the concept of the word doctor is interesting. Again, look at language, how it's been altered, what original root meaning is to these words, and how it's utilized today. The definition is not the same. And if you assume it is, you'll end up getting in some kind of trouble, whether it's being an assumption made about what you're doing that isn't what you're doing, or a misunderstanding of interacting with someone you call a doctor and recognizing they didn't help you, they actually harmed you.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the adulteration of the language is something I always keep coming back to on my show, where you see this complete Orwellian doublespeak where up is right, you know, up is down, right is left. It's all just insanity. And personally, I'm coming from the cult of academia, is what I always call it. I call it the cult of academia. All, you know, K through 12, I always say is indoctrination. And then the university, pinkies out, is always is the weaponization of that stuff. Right. But I think that's one of the main cults. But, you know, to your point, the medical mafia, to borrow the Ty Bollinger term there, is definitely another cult. You know, you got the cult of academia and the cult of medicine.
Yes.
And I just keep seeing people sacrificing their children to this or sacrificing themselves. It's kind of that old Moloch thing from the Bible. You know, people are just, yes, yes, give my kid all these vaccines. Sure, they're 3 hours old, but you never know. They might need that hep vaccine. They might need that vitamin K injection and all this stuff. And I kind of get overwhelmed sometimes. I go back to the old Ghostbusters quote where you got dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. And I can kind of reconcile with Nero. I'm going to start playing the fiddle and just going out there on the street, I guess, because, I mean, it seems kind of a doomed scenario sometimes.
John, it's important to unplug from that media matrix.
Yeah.
So that you can regain your sanity, because, you know, it'll drive you to drink or distraction some way, shape or form. It will disconnect you from source.
True.
And I think that's intentional. And, you know, that's how we become manipulated, because once we're disconnected from source, or let's say the connection is if not fully severed, because I don't think it can totally always ever be severed, but you can reduce the amount of flow, for instance.
Absolutely.
You can impede it. Then fear can kind of creep in, because it can look very intimidating and scary, rightfully so. I mean, think about the modern medicine, religion, or church, or cult, right? Mm-hmm. We call it the Church of Pharmaceutical Mysticism. So if you sacrifice your child on that altar, you know, that rite of passage is often called vaccination now, vaca meaning cow. I mean, you basically are turning children into animals and beasts in the field. They are, you know, they talk about herd immunity.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of these things that reduce our divinity. Not to say that animals aren't divine in as part of creation, but there is a distinction when you enter the human frame, how you can interact and the opportunities for spiritual growth and consciousness and making choices that maybe animals can't make or don't make. But the idea here is, you know, choosing what media platforms you plug into consciously, much like choosing music consciously.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in my show, you know, it's kind of like I talk about, I rock the health world. So we do a lot of, you know, rock music. And some people say, well, that's not good music. That's not spiritually uplifting. But recognize that music is a gift of creation. Sound has a vibration. That vibration can be used medicinally. And a lot of what happened in the 20th century with the change in music and this kind of rock and roll kind of music broke up old thought forms and old consciousness. Now, to some, that would be a negative context, and you can argue that. To some, it opened up opportunities and possibilities by breaking up thought forms, that now you can start looking at things a little differently and assessing them differently. So there's always a positive and negative to everything.
Sure.
The question is, you know, what do you do with, you know, new information, or how do you interpret it? How do you apply it? And there are certainly principles that are immutable and unchangeable, even as we go through what seems to be transformational change here on planet Earth, that some of which we go, you know, I don't really like what's happened here, right? The degradation, the movement away from certain principles. But the opportunity to make conscious choices, as opposed to be blindly programmed to act and react in certain ways, I think that elevates the possibility for spiritual unfoldment. It doesn't degrade it. That's the irony of, you know, the difficult times that we live in. There's opportunity in these times, as well as, of course, there is the opportunity to choose poorly. But I would rather embrace the freedom to choose, as opposed to being coercively threatened into, for instance, compassion. Right?
Yeah.
People that argue, you know, welfare, that's compassionate. Well, if it's given freely from your heart, that's truly compassion. And I think it elevates consciousness. When it is done at the force of a government gun with the threat of loss of liberty or even life, how can that be defined as compassion? And I think a lot of good people, if I could say that, get confused by that. And they really believe the government can deliver compassion via coercion, via theft, via threat of violence. And so there are nuances to these discussions about even what is, you know, say spiritual in a sense. I think, you know, we are spiritual beings having human experiences. You've heard that concept.
Oh, absolutely.
Context. But it means we have an opportunity to, again, really choose poorly. But I've learned the greatest lessons I've learned about my own health and healing and principles that I apply in my life by my ignorance or the ignorance of my parents, you know, the way they raised me. And it's not an accusation or an angry thing. It's a matter of the opportunity presented itself. And on some level, we take it. And then what do we do with it? Do we learn from it? Do we grow from it? Or does it drive us deep into states of depression and anger and frustration? And getting stuck there is really the problem, not that we have these emotions along the way.
Oh, yeah. I feel like, I mean, your show and mine and others really serve to educate people, because, you know, I'm 41, and when I was a lot younger and kind of, you know, to your point with your family growing up, I didn't know much of this information. You know, it wasn't uncommon for me to have something from a fast food place or to have regular food, and I had vaccines and all this mess. And it wasn't until maybe, you know, 20 years ago when I was starting to wake up to this sort of thing. And so I realized it's an incremental process too. You know, you got to sort of learn a little each day and say, oh, well, man, I was an idiot. What was I doing? I got that tetanus vaccine when I broke my nose, and nobody, you know, that was silly, but.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think the learning curve or the best steps people can do to sort of begin on this path? I mean, for you, what was it that kind of got you into this? I know you mentioned you had a lot of health issues growing up, and Lord, me too. I could speak to that too, but what were you on that road?
A thematic undercurrent of my whole life has been about the health of this body that I inhabit while I'm here, and being the canary in the coal mine of Generation X, I experienced most of the ailments and illnesses, mostly chronic, but a lot of infections that were acute that became chronic because of the treatment by modern medicine. My dad was a pharmaceutical rep. Mm-hmm. His brother, my uncle, was a doctor. So I was a medical family, and everything was met with medical drugs, pharmaceutical products. So my challenges, my health challenges, led me to seek answers to those challenges that were not met appropriately, ultimately, by modern medicine. In fact, everything they did to suppress my symptoms created more problems. So as my prayers to God, my petitions to God, being help me to heal, please show me a way to get well, even if it were a lightning bolt from the sky, I'll take it, whatever it takes, please. And the answers were not instantly given in, oh, here's your remedy, here's your lightning bolt, you're all better. It wasn't a miraculous overnight recovery. It was principles in life itself, having to learn about how the world operates, how the world works, how creation works. And these, you know, go to spiritual places and levels. And, you know, I consider what I do on the air a healing ministry, and it's non-denominational. Everybody's welcome. You know, as I was called to serve in this way, it wasn't about, oh, you can only teach Christians or Jews or this. It's like, no. If somebody's sincerely asking, give them the answer. Or lead them to the answer for themselves and let them figure it out. And that was the empowering message I got. And so as I got grounded in spiritual context and concepts, immutable principles, and began to apply them, then and only then was I sent a teacher, right? When the student is ready, the teacher appears. That's an old adage too.
Yeah.
And at that point, I met a homeopathic doctor when I was 24, and I began to learn from him about how to care for this physical body, much less emotional and other things. And that's where I learned homeopathic medicine, organic, non-GMO food, although GMOs weren't an issue way back then, that I know of anyway, and detoxified my liver, began to utilize whole food supplementation, cleaning and purifying the things that put into my body, whether it be water or food, and gradually overcame in the span of 2 years the bulk of what I had suffered from the previous 24. And then when I found I had an ability to communicate these principles I was learning, eventually I ended up sort of accidentally, if you believe in accidents, I don't, but in broadcast media. And now I've been on, radio for the last 20 years and, of course, expanded with the new media into video formats through all the ways that people can get it through the internet. So not dependent upon just radio signals alone. The challenge for any of us is to be open to the gifts of healing that I believe are always available to us, but have to break through our own conditions or mindsets or beliefs that healing is only this way. And if it doesn't come in this box wrapped in this bow in this color, I'm not going to accept it, or I won't even see it or recognize it. So I think that's why the grounding in spiritual principle, whatever you perceive that to be, is very important, because you realize you need that flexibility to accept gifts in ways that you were programmed to perceive them only, and then opening your eyes and ears and heart to receive them in ways that maybe your programming wouldn't have allowed in that sense. So for me, the ailments and illnesses were a gift. You don't often see that while you're in them, but it's like people who had cancer and overcame it mostly holistically, but not exclusively, say, my gosh, that cancer was the greatest gift I ever got. Mm-hmm. You heard that? Because it transformed their ability to receive, for instance, give and receive love, gratitude, all of these other things that tend to go to the spiritual places. So our journey is more than just about, the politics we talk about that they want us to be manipulated by, the Hegelian dialectic. Oh, it's left versus right. It's conservative versus liberal. It's like all of these things, they're playing on our minds to kind of keep us in fear, keep us in a victim state of consciousness. And much like with ailments and illnesses that they say, oh, it's genetic, it's bad genes. And, we don't know why you're sick, but just keep taking the drugs. We're your go-between. Right? It's kind of like the priest craft.
Yeah, the priest class. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's bizarre. I see so many connections as we're talking about this to all those ancient civilizations of the Aztecs and the Greeks and the Romans, where they had this priest class, and their goal was to unoccult all this hidden knowledge for the common people. And I feel like people don't grasp that. They don't see that thread connecting right back to the lab coat and stethoscope guys. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny. A friend of mine and I kind of joke about this sometimes because we'll tell people stuff and they'll sort of poo-poo it. And we'll say, man, if only we had one of those lab coats and we could just go around and just people would go, oh, wow. Yeah, you mean I really just could put some garlic oil on my ear if I have an earache? That's it? Oh, man, how did I not know this? I'm glad you're here, lab coat guy. Yeah. But, I mean, for me personally, it's so hard to talk to people. It's easier to talk to people on this show and on the platform than to actually talk to people in real life oftentimes. Because a few weeks ago, I was in the cult, and I was talking to another member of the cult about life, and we just had a brief conversation. That's all. I like to try to keep it very brief. But, yeah, the lady was saying, oh, I'm about to give my daughter the ear tubes because she keeps having these chronic earaches and stuff. And I always fight the urge. I was biting my tongue. I was like, do I tell her anything? Okay, here goes. So I was like, you know, you could really just get some garlic or mullein oil and put those in there. And, you know, the side effect is smell like a breadstick. That's kind of it. You're not going to have any sort of harmful gut flora changes like the antibiotics and all this stuff. And she didn't dismiss it, but she was definitely like, well, we already signed up for the surgery, so I think we're going to do that. And I was like, okay, well, I tried.
You did. You did. And you're dealing with people that are still plugged into the medical matrix.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's nice if it was a kind interaction. Sometimes just the mere bringing up like you did compassionately, you know, it's met with angry or even violent responses. You know, how dare you? Like, you know, you're challenging their belief system as if it was their religion, for instance. And so you have to be sensitive to where people are at ultimately, because we are, I believe, given that freedom of choice, you know, whether, you know, people are arguing to take it away or not. The reality is on a spiritual level, we have been granted this freedom or free will to make choices to screw up and learn from them, perhaps in this lifetime or the next. So, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, in many times when I learned this, you become almost a zealot in what your new belief is. And it becomes annoying to people, just like, you know, anybody, if you have a belief system and somebody comes in and tries to run roughshod over it, maybe they don't intend harm, but they're so excited about what they found, whatever it is. And you're like, geez, you know, I'm glad for you, but come on, lighten up a little bit, right? I have a different experience here. So when you find out about all these ways to heal and you've got someone you love and care about and they're going to the oncologist for chemo, they may not be open for a discussion, but as I said many times on this show and probably said it in the Truth About Cancer series with Ty Bollinger, that if they choose a way that you feel it might be harmful to them and they're unable or unwilling to open their hearts to hear what you're saying, just love them. Just give them that love and compassion. Truly support their decision, even if you feel like it's the wrong one, because you know, it's not your decision to make. And this is a hard place to get to, especially with people that you love. This is why families are, you know, most difficult, contentious places, because we tend not to want to let go. And, you know, it's our family. We wouldn't want them to go down that road. But the ultimate level of respect we can afford them is the respect we've been given by that which really created us. And that is the freedom to make these choices, to learn the hardest of the hard lessons. And we can be there for them when they're ready to open up. But are we going to be there for them when they make the decision that we perceive to be the wrong one? And if I'm willing to, let's say, violently, and I don't mean, you know, you're punching them, but let's say forcefully get in their way, right? You say, I am going to stand between you and that oncologist because it is the wrong decision. You know, this violates their freedom. And it's a hard thing to you know, come to that and live that way, to realize that people are going to make choices that are, you know, from your experience, maybe not the best choices, but it's their choice to make, not ours. And when you get to there, because I feel like, and maybe you had this too, growing up, if you have any, you know, passion to help others, if it just wells up within you, you don't want to see people suffer. And you say, gosh, if I can relieve their suffering, alleviate their suffering, I want to do that. And then you find by doing that, and I've used this, the story about the helping the little old lady across the road. You know, you see her, she's waiting at the edge of the road, and you grab her by the arm gently because, you know, you care for her, and you start walking across the road. In the meantime, she's resisting you and she's beating you over the head with her umbrella, and you're like, why is this lady doing this? I'm helping her to cross the road. You get to the other side and you ask her, why, lady? Why are you being, you know, I'm helping you. She's like, I didn't want to go across the road. It wasn't my intention to go across the road. So you violated their freedom of choice. And you think, well, I'm helping you to go across the road and being, you know. So there are these concepts that we could apply in our lives, really find out where people are at. What is their state of consciousness? What are they ready to receive? Where do they want to go? And it's not that you want to help them to destroy themselves. It's not that you're endorsing their choice of oncology, for instance, but it's the respect that, you know what, they have that freedom just like I have that freedom. I wouldn't want them to stop me from making choices that I feel are right for me. And why would I do that to them? You know, that violation, man, is going to bring a difficulty for that person who's already going through a difficult circumstance. Now you're adding to your difficulty or difficulties because you're taking on their burden and it's not your role. Now we've been given the freedom to screw up that way too.
Of course.
You know, the fact that I know this now is because I've screwed up that way. I've done it. I know what it's like to violate somebody's freedom in the name of protecting them.
It's tough. There's so much going on out there right now. We got the exploding cancer rates, the autism rates, the mental illness. I mean, that's another one I think a lot of people kind of overlook. But, I mean, there's so many people on different mental illness meds out there. And that's saying nothing to the drug abuse, the, you know, fill in the blank of the despotism gauntlet that we're running through. Mm-hmm. And I always kind of come back to this, and I know it's sort of my bias, but I feel like it's a cultural change that needs to be happening. And a lot of people, you know, to connect it to the medical mafia thing, just keep putting band-aids on it. Well, I'm depressed. Well, let me have some of this. And, well, man, I need to relax after work. Give me a six-pack and cut on the boob tube and all this stuff. And way back to that Flexner report, what you were talking about, I mean, that could have been one of the cornerstones. And, it, I mean, obviously is that sort of caused one of these shifts because people went from the naturopath and the homeopath and the chiropractic and stuff that you and I would embrace, and those elements became demonized, and it became solely, well, you got to go to med school to be a doctor, you got to have this much training and wear your stethoscope and lab coat and quote-unquote practice, being the operative word, I think, medicine. Is there some ways that we can reel this in, or is it just what I think it is, you know, the individual person just trying to do their little part and say, hey, buddy, you know, you might want to look into... Yeah. Chiropractic, if you got a back problem, instead of taking 4 extra strength Advil or Percocets or whatever they're going on, you know.
Yeah, we are suffering in what some would determine or call mass psychosis.
Oh yeah.
And the thing is, we go insane in groups, and we regain our sanity one by one by one, and slowly over time until you know you've left that group. Now, that's the hard thing because in group dynamics, a group will shame you, threaten to shun you, denigrate you, maybe even visit violence upon you. We see this now with the fear of the germ and the vaccine cult, where people who have woken up from it are now being ostracized. I mean, they're calling, you know, Jewish people unclean. The Orthodox Jews are unclean because their children are not vaccinated. It's like these are horrific things, but we are always challenged to, you know, find our path in life, and ultimately it's an individual path. Now, we may choose to belong to a group or align with a group or groups like, you know, a religious group or a political group, but the insanity happens with groupthink, with collectivism, because it sacrifices the individual, and that, to me, is the ultimate evil, interestingly enough, because, you know, how many individuals will you sacrifice before it's enough? And they never answer the question when they talk about the vaccine religion, for instance. But the idea of regaining your sanity is, again, it doesn't happen in mass. It's one by one by one. Now, some could say, well, there's a 100th monkey principle that occurs, that at a certain point, there's a critical mass that occurs, and then everybody suddenly sees what was always there. And they couldn't a moment before. You know, I don't know if that's real or not, but we do recognize there are points in our lives, in my life certainly, where I couldn't see something right in front of my face, and then suddenly the blinders are lifted, or the curtain is, the veil of illusion is lifted. We can't lift that veil of illusion for others because it can destroy them. Sometimes it can. They're not ready consciousness is not ready. So we have to respect where they are in their belief system, as long as their belief system is not violating your ability to move about the earth cabin. And that's the challenge right now with the vaccine religion, because their belief system, it's not just a belief system, it's a cult that they're trying to forcefully engage all of us to be part of. And that's a big struggle now, where you have a legitimate need, I perceive, mm-hmm. to stand against a violent threat, a threat of violence to your children, to yourself, to participate in their belief system. So it's crossing, you know, a line. It's not just that they have a belief system, it's that they want to coerce or force you into their belief system, into their cult. And it's like, you know, violent, go to the Crusades.
Oh, yeah.
For instance, you have a belief system. It's not enough that you believe it. You are going to say convert or die. That is, you know, that to me is it dishonors what you claim to believe if you believe in a loving creator, for instance. So we're dealing with that in a number of ways. Right now, the vaccine church is one of the biggest violent cults on the planet, more so than, you know, even what we see in, for instance, a radical Islam. Which, you know, I don't believe that, you know, I've got friends who are part of the that belief system. Dr. Rasha Bitaru, who I've been friends with for many years, he doesn't advocate violence against people. He's very loving. So any system that you try to say everybody in that system believes the same thing, it's not true. You go to your Christian church, query somebody or all of the people in that church, you'll find differences in beliefs among the people in that church. So we have ultimately individual capacity to you know, to perceive life differently through our own eyes or through our own experience. But if there is a church engaged in violent coercive techniques to convert you, right now the biggest one I see, the most dangerous one I see on the planet, is the vaccine church. And so this is beyond Christianity, Islam, Judaism, or any other religious belief or spiritual practice, you know, that may or may not engage in forceful acts of conversion. And I think most are not, but right now we have to deal with this very directly, because it's really captured our culture and our country and our body politic. And so when I talk about healing on all levels and I talk about political healing, we've got to recognize that, as our founding fathers did, that the best you could hope to do is constrain government so that it doesn't violate your right to life, liberty, or property. And right now, the vaccine or pharmaceutical church has gained control of most of our government on the federal and state and local levels to forcefully mandate participation in a belief system. And again, I don't hear people talking about it that way as much as we should, to recognize it for what it is. And if you want to believe in vaccines, most of us who have come through vaccination, I was vaccinated as a kid, although much fewer vaccines than they do today, as much as I perceive and believe that they are of the devil, I'm just going to say it that way, I don't have a right to stop you, use violence or force to stop you from doing it if you want to engage in it, even if I believe it'll be harmful to you or your child. I can intellectually engage and talk to you or try to persuade you, but if I use violence or the threat of violence, then I've crossed the line. So that's a concept that is lost to those who are promoting vaccines through the force and coercive power of government.
Yeah, there's absolutely a lot to unwrap there. I'm glad you mentioned the groupthink term, because that's one I think always comes up in my mind's eye when I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking, you know, it's definitely this collective groupthink, or at least some sort of Stockholm syndrome, where you've got, you know, mass casualties suffering from these vaccines, but nobody's talking about it, or no one wants to talk about it. They're going, oh yeah, you know, my hostage slapped me around a little bit, but you know, I'm okay, so I'm okay. But, you know, I have a daughter, and we've managed to not vaccinate at all. I mean, I was very adamant from the get-go. That's on that.
Well done.
But the groupthink is very real, and I don't think we've pretty much had very low-level groupthink sort of perpetrated upon us. But, I mean, you still get it, where I try to not mention it, just because I know it's one of those hot potato terms that, depending on your crowd, it's going to be like, you know, they're going to point at you like the horror movies,
right?
Thing. But yeah, I mean, it's still there. It's sort of, you mentioned that you don't vaccinate, or I always just sort of lowball it and say, well, we're waiting. You know, in my brain, I'm going, yeah, we're knowing hell we're doing that. But, you know, even still, you get that, oh, really? You don't vaccinate? And it's still that sort of collective groupthink pressure. Mm-hmm. I always thought I grew out of high school, and I sort of seem like they just keep moving the ball. Like, I'm still in high school. There's still this bizarre peer pressure of, oh, yeah, you're not in the cool group. You're not vaccinating. You're actually wanting to control your health care instead of leaving it to the guy in the coat. But it's so bizarre how that's still perpetuated. I mean, you got the vaccine cult, the medical mafia cult, and even the GMO cult. I always find it very problematic to go to birthday parties and functions because I'm like, all right, you can't have the ice cream. It's got corn syrup in it. I don't want you eating lead. But it's hard to, pun intended, it's hard to digest and tell other people this and tell your kid, okay, maybe we shouldn't have the ice cream and the GMO-laden cake from the fast food place up the street. You know, I'll bring you something. We'll have that. I mean, is this something... How do you deal with this? I mean, I know I'm not the only parent out there that's having these crosses to bear when you go to different functions, and you don't want your kid to be the crazy person that's in the bubble, but you're also going, I don't want you to eat the GMO. I see what it does. At the very least, you're going to get diarrhea or upset stomach because you have a clean diet, and the rest of these children have probably been eating GMO for 4 or 5 years. So,
sure.
Is there a way to tackle this?
Well, I know I've raised two kids organically and they've not been vaccinated. So
your question
is a fair one. And I think that parents, you know, a certain point, you've got to find where is your strength and your resolve to raise your children differently than you were raised when you recognize that in ignorance, our parents had no earthly idea. They didn't do it maliciously for the most part. But when you become awake and aware, do you have an obligation to defend yourself and your children from things that could harm them? I think most parents would say, yeah, of course I do. Now, perception of harm, that's the difference. You know, many parents don't perceive the harm. So they'll look at you or me and say, you know, we're the outliers. We're the crazy ones.
Yeah.
Just come on, just have some. Like, sorry, I don't worship at your church. And, you know, if you don't respect me and my children's choices, you know, how much of a friend are you at that point? And we have for years sent food for our kids if they go to a party or anything like that. That's a normal part of their upbringing, so they don't know any different. And it's like, well, that's just what we do, even today. But you also try and find folks that have some level of alignment and are conscious about food, that you begin to create communities, whether they be loosely knit or, you know, you're intentionally moving into an area where the consciousness is reflective of what you believe. But there's no one answer to this because so many people are unconscious still, even in communities of where you perceive a greater level of consciousness. How many are as hardcore as you or me to say, you know what, we're not having them eat the ice cream and cake at these parties. We're sending our own stuff and they can enjoy that. Or now my daughter, who's almost 14, you know, she went out to lunch with her friends yesterday at a kind of a fast food place. She didn't eat anything. She doesn't have a problem with it. It's just a normal part of her thing, just as I've become, well, you know, able and capable of fasting. But, of course, the health of the children to be able to do that, that's another thing. I couldn't do that growing up because I was so deficient, devoid of certain minerals like chromium. I couldn't go a couple of hours without eating. So part of it is, of course, the physical challenges we have. We have to care for this physical body. And if we haven't cared for it well, and we haven't been a good example for others, least of all our children, they're not going to follow on with what we said. Because a big question parents ask is, how do you get your kids to eat healthy? It's like, it's because that's all we do.
Yeah, that's all
we
do.
You know, it's not like a part-time endeavor. It's like, that's all we do. So it's a normal part, and they will learn from us. You know, it's like the old you know, advertisement about, you know, PSA against drug use. It's like, where did you learn to take drugs? I learned it from you, Dad.
Exactly.
Right? You got all these drugs in your, you know, medicine cabinet. And so our kids were raised on homeopathic medicine, dietary supplements, herbal medicines and things. So they know how to address these things in a non-toxic way. But it is a challenge in this unconscious world. But I think that, you know, we're here specifically at this time for that reason, to be able to, you know, survive it and thrive within it and help others and inspire others to see through it, if that's our choice. Now, when our kids become of the age of majority, my son is now 19, I always said, you know, listen, you have an opportunity, just as I did when I became an adult, to make choices, even those that I would disagree with. And thus far at 19, he's still eating all organic. Man, you know, it's great. It's not like, oh, I can finally do my own thing. It's like, I've taught you that what you eat matters, and how you feel because of what you eat is very real. Pay attention to that. It didn't happen randomly. It's not evidence of a drug deficiency. And so giving these kids the opportunity to learn is the greatest gift that I could give them, because the greatest gift I was given by that which created me, and I'm not talking now mom and dad, I'm talking beyond that, was the freedom to make choices and to learn from those choices. And modern medicine kind of steals that choice by suppressing the communication tools our body or our cells have, much less the microbiome. And so we are taught that every symptom is evidence of, for instance, an FDA-approved drug deficiency, and that it's all a random act, or it's all a bad roll of the genetic dice. And it's, perpetuating a victim state of mentality, physiologically, emotionally, mentally, economically, politically, and even spiritually. I don't play that game. I'm not part of that church view. So it is a challenge when you wake up from the herd and then you're, pointed out as the outlier. The question is, do you have the wherewithal to stand in your truth, to own your talents and gifts and beliefs, despite all of that is thrown at you? And I think these are the things that are challenging for any child. And I've seen my children grow up and struggle with those things as they have been. They are the part of the group in many cases, in many ways. And so we've stayed open and communicated with our kids about what it's like. And, I feel like I've raised my kids to be the minority of a minority of a minority of a minority. And I am open to that. I said, listen, you are an individual. You get to choose again. You're part of this family as a kid. You don't get to make every choice you want to make, but by and large, we're supporting you. We love you. And given that environment, I have all the confidence of the world. If I've taught them about their connection to spirit, to God or creator, that they'll always have that connection, even as they grow older and they don't have us to, guide them every step of the way, that always find a way back to that deep level connection, however you find it. Of course, everybody's different, their family, their church beliefs, etc. But if you can recognize that connection and practice it, you'll be fine no matter what.
I'm glad. You're giving me hope here. I'm thankful that you got those two children that are doing well and have stayed organic and have not done the vaccine thing. I mean, I always kind of see it comically when we go to certain functions, kind of likening it back to the after-school specials from the 70s or 80s, where it's like, come on, you want some drugs at this party? And the kid's going, no, I don't want to. Like, come on, everybody's doing it. It's sort of the same thing, but it's with the GMO or with the vaccines or whatever the case may
be. Are they strong enough to stand on their beliefs? And I think that's up to us to be living examples for them and others.
Oh, yeah.
I've done my show for 20 years. And people have come and gone through it all, and some people have been with me for the bulk of it. And, they recognize that it's not an act, right? You hang out with somebody long enough, you'll figure out if they're for real, right? Because you'll see them. Are they going to slip up and do something opposite to what they talk about or preach? And, I strive to always live my beliefs and communicate them as clearly as I can. And if those beliefs change, to discuss those honestly as well. And as I said, kids know, they can see through, what you say versus what you do. So if you live your beliefs, become a living example of that, it's still going to be up to them to choose to do so. But you'll find less rebellion against what you do, because it's not done in hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. It's not done because I believe this is the right thing to do, and then I'm going to do the opposite. Hopefully they won't catch me, right? And that's a big part of a lot of even religious leaders that have, caused such a negative view of religion. And I understand people have a distinction between organized religion and spiritual beliefs, and I respect that. Mm-hmm. But there have been a lot of people who have claimed to be, good, pious people that you look behind the scenes. And I'm not saying that I don't have faults too. I think we all have that while we're here. But you try to, go through with honesty, integrity, and humility and make it through. But we're taught that, honesty is dangerous. Integrity can be used against you. And I think, the lack of integrity is makes you much more vulnerable. Hypocrisy makes you much more vulnerable. I see that when we talk about our political leaders. Why do they make decisions that you think even they know better? Mm-hmm. And you think, well, what kind of threats have been made behind the scenes about things they don't want you to know? So there's always that element as we move about. So, you know, we can be honest about our faults too, but, you know, we're always taught, hide them. Don't let anybody see them.
I've
screwed up. I want to tell you all about my screw ups. Or if I screw up in a given day, it always makes for a good story on radio. Yeah. Like, dude, I ate too much. This is what happened, you know? And I learned from it. I want people the opportunity to learn from my mistakes so that maybe they can make a choice that, I don't have to go through that. Right? And I think we're given that freedom too, that, you know, a lot of times, we insist I have to go through that. And other times I look and I say, you know what, that looks like a pretty miserable choice. And what you had to go through because of that choice is like, you know, I think I'll go with your experience there. We can adopt that as our own. I think we're given that freedom as well. Some of us say, well, I think I can do it better. And you'll go down that road and have the same or worse experience. And you go, okay, now I learned it. But that's the freedom that we've been granted. And it's like, why would I get in the way of anybody that feels like they need that experience other than to say, you know, I'm here for you. I'm not going to get in the way, but, you know, I warned you. I'm not going to say I told you so, unless I'm on radio. Sometimes we do, and I told you so for fun. But
I think that's kind of what spurred this big growth in, if you want to call it alternative media or more shows like yourselves and mine and others, where people are really looking for that legitimacy. I think they've seen the stuff caught on a live mic from the big networks. They've seen the big networks compromise over the vaccine issue or the pharmaceutical mafia issue or what have you. And I think people are just going, man, can we just get somebody that's not the perfect lighting, the perfect speaker? Maybe he's stuttered here and there. Can we just get a normal person that's giving us the real stuff rather than the bro-call perfect chosen by five people tie and the lighting's perfect like Oprah or whatever, you know? I think people are just hungry and starving for that reality that they're not getting.
Yeah, would you say it's a hunger for authenticity?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you think about the talking heads in the news media or, you know, even the talk shows like the Oprahs of the world. I mean, how much of that is authentic? How much of that is a compromise to be able to reach or achieve that level of fame and fortune? And, you know, I'm not here to answer it for those folks, but, you know, we have to look in the mirror every day. And what do you see? Do you like it? Do you sleep well without the aid of major drugs, for instance?
That's a big one.
You know, these are issues. And I think that if we talk about next generation, generation Y and Z, millennials and post-millennials, do they crave authenticity or do they crave more lies being told to them? Because we lived in the 20th century in an era of one lie after another, over another, over another. And we fell prey to a lot of propaganda. And, you know, the question of consciousness shift, if the young people are here to help us make those shifts and those leaps, I look at the vaccine, coming back to that story, as one of the primary ways you can dampen consciousness of these young souls coming through right now to make transformation. They yearn for something better and greater. I respect that. Although there are a lot that are duped into this idea of collectivism and socialism and even communism now. Mm-hmm. But the quest for authenticity perhaps is something that we can embrace, and we could be examples, living examples for those generations, hopefully mentor them into places that they can take and achieve even more, or perhaps repair some of the things that we allowed to go off the rails, you know, in the 20th and now early 21st century. So there's a lot that's on us, of course. We can't just turn it over to these next generations without proper, mentorship and guidance. And so I really enjoy when I hear that whole families are listening and watching the show, the Robert Scott Bell Show, together, and the young people are digging it. They're feeling it. And it makes me feel good that, you know, yeah, they're honestly, they come in with very strong BS detectors, mm-hmm. and it's kind of beaten out of them by, you know, mainstream media, by schooling, by other indoctrinations. So if you can get them before they're indoctrinated into the cessation of critical thinking, you've got an opportunity for them to come in and do really extraordinary things.
Yeah, the cult of academia is always so funny because I think they always preach this critical thinking pedagogy. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, we got to think critically, and, you know, to that just means think about gender and think about slavery and think about the evil white, whatever, you know, that's their idea of critical thinking. But it's so much more than that. And I hope at least that people are catching up, you know, as you know, to your point, they're finally, if you get them early enough and listen to your show and mine and others, you know, they're starting to really question, okay, well, how the heck did we get here? I mean, one of my biggies, and I realize this is a huge rabbit hole to go down, but, you know, the eugenics thing. I always look at the eugenics from the Darwinian 1859 Origin of Species deal all the way up to today, and I feel like they probably, or at least it's the way I'm viewing it, they took the foot off the gas as far as, okay, let's exterminate people and let's sterilize people. Okay, let's pump the brakes. Maybe we'll just do the Brave New World thing where we can drug everybody to death and we can vaccinate everybody to death. And to me, it's just going to create this, I don't know what to say it in a nice manner, except a subclass of people that are always going to be controlled by the state or have to have a nurse or, you know, if we're going to have a burgeoning autistic population, somebody's going to have to care for these people. Unfortunately, they've been damaged to such a great degree that they're not going to be functional in society. And the same is going to be true for the eugenics cancer, multi-billion-dollar industry where we've got people on chemo and now they're unable to work, or, you know, just fill in the blank of the obesity, the diabetes, the anything you want to put on it. It seems to be a huge eugenics cult. Mm-hmm. And I know there's been anecdotal evidence and as well as people actually saying this, but the quote-unquote elites, they're not the ones vaccinating their children. And Bill Gates is going, no way, I'm not giving my kid a device when he's 5 years old. That's stupid. So, I mean, you see sort of the elites doing this and the plebs doing all this. And it seems to me it's, they don't call it eugenics, but it looks a heck of a lot like, you know, Darwin, Galton, Wedgwood versus everybody else. They just sort of put it in a nice propagandized package. So it's okay. That's all right. Let's have some ice cream and get some vaccines today.
Well, John, I don't know if you've recommended this on your show, but my dear friend Liam Sheff, a lot of the posters behind me he developed as well. He wrote a book called Official Stories, and I would say, not that I'm into requiring reading, but if I was to put a required reading list for school, I would put Official Stories on that list because it will help people to think critically, to see through the lies and the propaganda and the programming. And come to their own conclusions. And I think you talk about critical thinking. I think the last thing that our scholastic system is doing from nursery school up through highest level graduate degrees into doctorate programs is to teach critical thinking. Quite honestly, if they do, they're couching the term and they're using it wrong. Again, bastardizing words, changing the definition. But critical thinking is absolutely the enemy to groupthink, to collectivism, to what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to unlearn, right? I talk about deprogramming, and it's what I had to do coming through all the way through university level. The programming so deep, it becomes unconscious. It rules. My friend Bruce Lipton, PhD, molecular biologist, talks about the biology of belief, talks about the programming that takes place before we even born into our first or so, 7 years or so of life, that then 95% of our life is guided by unconscious programming. Whether it be intentional or not, maybe 5% of the time are we engaged in consciously co-creating our life, the things that we really love to do, dream and desire and all of that. What's our passion? And so society tends to frown upon those folks because it reflects back on them their own inadequacies or fears or, you know, reflects on them that they are. Another parable I like to bring up from time to time is we come as eagles. And the story of the eagle's egg that somehow got confused, mixed in with the chicken eggs. And this eagle was born of chickens. And so it learned to scratch around in the dirt for worms, just like all of the chickens where it lived. And it was adopted as if it was a chicken, but it would always look up to the sky and just look up at those eagles soaring up above and saying, oh my gosh, I would just love to be like that. I would love to be able to do that. And the chickens around him said, stop looking up there. You're a chicken. You know, don't live that delusion. You're just a chicken. And it's very much like that. The consciousness of the day tries to restrain you and retain you as one of them. Because if you get up and realize you are an eagle and you can soar up in the heavens like that while you're still here, how does it reflect on the herd, or in this case, the chicken coop and all the chickens? It makes them feel, you know, what am I not doing? And it's like, no, I would rather grab you down and make you one of us than have to self-reflect and say, I'm not living up to my potential. Now, I'm not making judgments about people that want to live as chickens and scratch in the dirt and eat worms. If that's what you're into, fine. But recognize that once you leave that, And this could be the difficulty in terms of your own family. If your consciousness shifts, you feel like I've got nothing in common with my own blood relatives. That happens a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Or friends you've had forever. And if they don't respect your choices and support you and love you regardless, then sometimes you have to leave the nest, the coop, so to speak. And it doesn't mean you love them less. It just means you love yourself enough to be who you really are, whether they recognize it or not. It's not on you. It's on them. But the group think again. The peer pressure that you brought up again will try to pull you back and guilt you into submission or do other things, right? If you're Jewish or Catholic, you live that guilt.
Yeah, absolutely, right.
So the question is, you know, do you allow those lower forms of vibration to draw you back into the trap, or do you live who you are? Not to rub it in their face, but to inspire, hopefully, those people or those chickens to recognize they're also eagles. This is a challenge any one of us may face at any point in time, or maybe multiple times of the day this happens. So the question of what you do with it, that's up to you.
The deprogramming principle I think you mentioned is very real. It was to me for sure, because I feel like it was maybe about 20 years ago that I quit taking all antibiotics completely. And I just sort of, what you would call awake then. I was just sort of doing the math and going, all right, well, I get bronchitis about twice a year and I get this antibiotic and then, you know, I get this asthma. And I was like, screw this. I'm just going to not do antibiotics anymore and try to build my immune system and see how it goes. And since then, I think I've had it maybe twice. I had a bad eye infection, and that was one of the times. But, I mean, it's been a pretty even-keeled ship ever since then. And you know, from then, health-wise, you just sort of expand and so forth to learn more. But for me, I mean, I went to public school and, like yourself, had the vaccines, went to the medical doctors, and it was a real deprogramming process. I don't know if a lot of people grasp. You really do. You have to start taking care of your own self. For me, sure. You know, if I get a cold or something like that, or even an ailment, like you mentioned, a chromium deficiency, the first thing I do is try to read and get as much information on it and try to, you know, what can I do to supplement to fix this? Or maybe I need to eat more greens or whatever. Where 20 years ago, it was like, all right, well, my stomach kind of hurts. Let's go to the guy in the coat and see what he says.
Yeah.
It's a real life change to flip that switch, to make that differentiation that I can control my own health to a certain degree, or a great degree, I think, anyway.
Well, and that's the reason, really, that I wrote Unlock the Power to Heal with Ty Bollinger, to give kind of a basic user's manual, right? A little bit of historical perspective, options that you didn't know you had for healing the body that you live in, and you know, being very practical and simple about it, that anybody can pick this up and start benefiting immediately. And then you try a little bit, you can dip your toe in and say, hey, is it okay? The water warm, right?
Yeah.
And then you apply those things, and one by one, you start saying, wow, this stuff is for real. And it's part of that process of deprogramming, because the program was, that stuff's crazy, it's kooky, you'll end up dead, it's not scientific. All of those things prevent you from, you know, leaving the corral, the coop, so to speak. And then when you do, that fear dissipates, because your experience overwhelms the irrational fear that was basically programmed into you. At a certain point, you agree with it as an adult, you know, even though it was unconsciously given to you as a child. And, you know, as an adult, then you have to make choices that are tough, like to go down the path of chemo for cancer, because we would program cancer, the big scary, the only thing that you can do is that. And you realize, my gosh, there are 100, if not 1,000 or more ways to address that and, you know, reverse course. People like Ty Bollinger have done extraordinary work in opening up the potential to have access to things you didn't have access to before. And that's evidence that the consciousness has shifted significantly for it to be allowed to even exist. All the explosion of new media. We can look at all the negative aspects of new media and internet, but the reality is, it's allowed for communication in ways we've never been able to communicate very directly about this. And now you see calls for censorship. It's like, again, the negative forces pushing back. Like, uh-oh, man, this gone too far. And there's always this push and pull while we're on this planet. I think it's part of the experience here. You know, you never can rest on your laurels and say, well, I've achieved it. Now I can hang it up and do nothing.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to re-win that every moment, every day. How you do it is up to you. I mean, I've got my techniques and ways, and you know, I try to communicate them as much as possible through my show and other things that I do. But, you know, find that direct connection. That's what I always encourage people to do.
Speaking of the censorship thing, how have you fared with the censorship racket? Have you experienced a lot of that on social media or on your own platforms or it seems to be ubiquitous. I guess your own platform's pretty safe, I hope, for right now.
Yeah, but I hope so. But, I mean, I think there's elements of shadow banning, things like that. But, I can only assess it from my experience. Partly, I'm not the biggest voice on the planet. Some of my friends in this arena have really reached out in a big way aggressively. I've been sort of passive about this, and I don't mean passive aggressive, but it's sort of like, I recognize that people aren't ready for the messages that I'm sending out, because it really is, it's not me proselytizing so that you believe what I believe. It's really kind of opening your mind to see things differently, and then you get to make decisions about how you want to live your life from this point forward. And because I'm so sensitive to not violating the rights of others, I probably kind of laid back on how we've grown over the years, being 20 years into this. So to some degree, we percolate below the radar screen, although hidden in plain sight. At the same time, I recognize that at any point in time, we could be, taken down a significant notch. So we've also made choices to have the information flow freely to many platforms, so that if any one of them are gone, we still have access, people still have access to it. There may be a time when, we're back in a totalitarian society. I don't wish that on us. I don't want that to happen. But if the pushback is so great and the people are so diseased and drugged that they acquiesce and they don't stand up for their liberty, there might be a time where we can't communicate as overtly as we are now. And throughout history, you find, a lot of the great thought leaders and spiritual leaders in history, really had to quietly go about their business to communicate one-on-one, almost underground. And then when they came out, they were attacked, obviously. We've got an interesting scenario today where it's not just one person speaking these truths. It's many thousands and thousands of people that are now coming to this. And the ability to communicate via the new technology has allowed the dissemination of information like never before. So the elites, if you'll call them that, are struggling with what to do. Will we tolerate their calls for censorship, soft censorship or otherwise? Or will we push back and say, no, it's too late? And I believe it is in many ways too late. The question is, what are we willing to tolerate in terms of suppression of the free flow of information or our ability to move about physically around the earth cabin, so to speak? And so we have choices to make. I don't know which way it's going to go. I know the potentials are there to be really totalitarian if we allow it to happen. That's one of the paths that's, could be part of the future of the people of planet Earth.
Yeah, I know for me, I kind of noticed a little bit lately in the last few weeks, and I feel like I'm a very small fish in this big pond, but I just sort of happened upon this because it was one of my early, early interviews was talking about geoengineering and chemtrails and that sort of thing. And I just happened to be looking at my own YouTube page because I was fixing a little bit of the stuff because I didn't have the episode number right or whatever. But and I was looking at that episode, and then beneath my title it had a little Encyclopedia Britannica definition of contrails, and it had a little plane with the contrails, and it was sort of like, okay, this guy's trying to say it's chemtrails, but the Encyclopedia Britannica says it's contrails. I was just like,
yeah,
nice misinformation, YouTube. Very subtle.
We've had if we have the MMR or measles in the title of any of our shows, often it'll appear through mainstream, if we will, outlets like YouTube, where they will put a Wikipedia link to the MMR, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just, I don't mind that per se. I find that more humorous.
Yeah.
It's the suppression. If they shut down the channels, which they're doing in many ways, that becomes, again, very problematic. And there's pushback. There are those that are trying to push back on that, thankfully. We'll see where it goes. But, as we are here, this interview, hopefully it provides some level of insight for those that are looking to go deeper, that recognize there's a lot of misinformation out there and trying to figure their way in the world. I want more of these voices. I'm loving that you're doing this. I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak with you and the group that follows you.
Thank you.
We've got to keep at it. If they throw some curveballs at us, we modify. Hopefully we can plan ahead for those things, but sometimes we're caught unaware, and we got to find a way to adapt in those scenarios. But remembering that, ultimately spiritual freedom is valuable or more valuable than just about anything else that we've been granted. And that's the thing that, when we push back on those who are trying to suppress our freedom, You know, I try to remind folks about that. You know, give these analogies about, you know, what are your spiritual or religious beliefs? How would you like it if I came in and used the government to forcefully make you a member of my belief system, whatever it might be? And you know, you want to reflect back those things that hopefully stimulate something deep within them to look about a little bit more consciously about what they're engaged in, about what they're mindlessly participating in because of fear or other things. So I think the inspiration, as we've talked about this hour together, you know, is ultimately about becoming, I think, a living example for others, as opposed to just talking about it. It's like, how does your life reflect, you know, what you are saying? Mm-hmm. Or is it just something you turn on for an hour once a week? You know, and I sense with you, obviously, you're living this. And that's, you know, the authenticity that people are craving, and why I'm sure that people are loving what you're doing. So I would encourage everybody to find that bliss, that path that lights them up, and live it fully. Because, you know, if we're not here for that, then what are we here for?
Yeah, I feel like people, like to your point, really have to be their own best example. So, I mean, if you don't want your kids to drink soda, you know, you can't, when they go to bed, you go there with the cherry Coke and your ho-hos and zebra cakes and just, oh, this is great, you know? Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's definitely what everybody needs to do. I was going back to this with a few guests ago, just being the individual, you know, doing your own thing, setting your own media up like yourself and others, and really just trying to get that out there. And if nothing else, make the globalist play a global whack-a-mole. We've got Robert Scott Bell, but Ty Bollinger's popping up. We've got Ty, but we've got, you know, John B. Wells is popping up. So there's all these different people that I hope we can keep getting this very important info out there.
Sure. And although it's important to talk about these subjects on a global level, recognize that the real power you have is local. It's in your own sphere of influence and community. And if you're not growing your own food, for instance, you know, you can make all of the expositions you want on how we're being attacked from above on the skies above us.
Oh, yeah.
But what are you providing as far as a living example opportunity to how you unplug from their matrix? It's by becoming more and more independent, not less so. And this is the difficulty, because it's like, well, I'm all on about raging against the machine, but you know what I mean? I got to actually live differently.
I know. It's
I got to eat differently. I might have to, you know, dig the soil and grow something. I might have to change, you know, these are the things where taking, and I've always strived to that, because I wasn't a gardener. I was a city slicker kid. I didn't know where food came from.
Yeah.
And then, you know, later on you discover it, and you know, you begin to learn about these things. And then I find great joy in the simple things, like digging in the dirt and growing things. And that's the next level of this localism. Ultimately, unplugging from that, you know, globalist agenda isn't just raging against them, but living differently. And I think that's, you know, again, that's the next level of consciousness, that shift that has to happen in how you interact, how you live in this lifetime on this planet.
Mm-hmm. I could not agree more, sir. Well, I definitely want to thank you for being with us today. I know you got to go get ready for your own show. So where can people find Unlock the Power to Heal? And where can they check out your own broadcast and just follow everything, Mr. Robert Scott Bell? Where can they find all that?
If you go to robertscottbell.com, it's that simple. It'll plug into all of the media platforms we have going out 2 hours a day plus 6 days a week. And the book's available on Barnes & Noble online and Amazon. I have a free chapter available at my website, robertscottbell.com. And if you would be so kind, sign up for email alerts. We don't send a lot out, but we also sometimes give away free stuff like CBD, you know, for those that are on our email list. So please take advantage of that. And if you have questions or comments, you could submit them at robertscottbell.com. We're pretty good about responding on the air, usually, because if you have a question, thousands of others have the same or similar question as well. So appreciate, John, the opportunity to be with you and your audience. And let me know if I can be of any assistance in any way moving forward. And remember, as I say, it's a reminder for me as it is for anybody else, but the power to heal really is yours.
I want to thank everyone for joining us today on the Anomic Age. Most importantly, thank you to our guest, Mr. Robert Scott Bell, for bringing a wealth of health and wellness, naturopath, homeopathic information to the table. You can find all of his information and then some at AnomicAge.com. So if you would please check out AnomicAge.com, share that link with your friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. And you can find everything from this guest and all past guests to the program at that site. Once again, you can't do everything, but you can indeed do something. So please go out there and try to make your own difference in the world. Till next time, be safe out there.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age Project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to anomicage.com. That's A-N-O-M-I-C-A-G-E.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm gonna go get some more money.